Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men Originals podcast. We are here after Liverpool beat Fulham in the Premier League.
Get
keep in. The title fight alive. Yes, I'm Paul Major, Chris Pager, Chloe Bloxham, and Dan Club are with me to have a good old natter about that. And then we're going to look ahead to the Merseyside derby as well. Anyone know what number Merseyside derby is?
300 and something.
No, 280.
I'm just asking if anyone knows.
Oh,
do you know?
No.
You don't know.
Oh, the answer's no.
Sure, I know. Yeah.
I can have a guess though, Paul. 280.
We tried.
Incorrect.
It was a rough guess.
I know what it's not.
What we said.
But it's not what you okay. said.
I remember the 229th, but I don't know if that was recently or fucking ages ago. We've done that a long time.
So I found out it was the channel. It came a little pop up. It's the Red Men YouTube channel's birthday yesterday. So that's. Oh. 14 years that wow. the content
how many videos
yeah, too many a bazillion yeah. See all these YouTubers doing a video a month and creaming it in fucking hell yeah absolutely that's fine the other way to do it is to do loads
many and often
yeah a couple of things before we dive into the chat Chris and I are live on stage at Box Park Liverpool yes
not now
What?
Not now.
Shit. Did I get this wrong? Yes, Wednesday night before the Merseyside derby, Box Park is now based as well in Liverpool in the Kingsbury Village, and we're there with Keo, so you can get involved. I hadn't seen this. There's a free registration, entry not guaranteed, but general admission and one drink is a tenner. So yeah, come and watch the Merseyside derby in the brand new Box Park in Liverpool. Me and Chris on stage beforehand.
Liverpool.
London. Yeah, not London or not Croydon or anywhere else that there's a Box Park. There's a Box Park in Liverpool. I'm not saying we agreed to do this thinking it was the London one.
We very much did.
It showed how keen we were to do it. I think
booked train to London.
We were very close to booking a train. And Steve came in and was like, "We do the production on the show on Thursday and all that." And I was like, "Well, I'll still be in London." He's like, "Why?" I was like, "Well, Box Park." And he's like, "I'm 99.9% sure it's a Pookers." I was like, "Oh right, okay." So we went on that website, and sure enough, our names were there. It was a good job Steve was in. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we'd have turned up in Wembley, booked hotels and all kinds of stuff.
Vlogging us ourselves on the way down. We get a phone call from Keo when we get there. Where did I use for sound check? Where are you? Why is it locked? Why is nobody here in Box Park Wembley to watch a Merseyside derby?
Steve went, did you not think why would he put the derby on in London? I thought, well, I've only been to that Box Park. So.
The first words out of my wife's mouth, why are they doing that in London? Why would they do a Merseyside? Anyway, it's not. It's in Liverpool. So if you're in Liverpool, you're looking for somewhere cool to watch the match. If you're looking for some more entertainment in the build to the end of the season as well, I'm also hosting an event with John Barnes at Hotel Anfield, Friday the 17th of May. If you're around for our end of season party and for the last game of the season, what have you, we're there on the Saturday night. The end of the season is obviously the Sunday. But if you're around for it days before that, come and check me out having a chat with John Barnes, an absolute, like, unequivocal Liverpool legend, one of the best technical footballers ever to grace the field. And yeah, I'm going to be in conversation with him at Hotel Anfield. Go to skiddle.com and check out just Evening with John Barnes at Hotel Anfield. We'll do you for that one. There's probably a more succinct way to do it, but I've just read what's in the URL, so that will do. But yeah, come and check out that one. I'm really looking forward to doing that. It's going to be potentially the greatest week in the history of all time. And we're going to leave it at that for now. Potentially the greatest week of all time. Because Liverpool won a football match again, Chris Pajak.
Yeah, it's putting it up there for great weeks, isn't it, really, to be honest with you?
Yeah. You were doing okay. I was a bit down in the dumps. Which is mad.
I've got one to hear that.
Yeah, we have a couple of them. We had a bit. Every now and again, we do a show where I'm the one going, nah, it's fucked. Nah, it's fucked. You're going, no, come on.
We've had 14 of them in 14 years.
Yeah, we've had two this year. That was the second time this year already. But yeah, I was a bit down in the dumps about it, and because I needed to know what Liverpool's reaction was going to be to it all. And as it turned out, they decided to react by winning a game of football, ultimately quite comfortably.
It's really good not conceding the first goal within a couple of minutes of the game. It's a really good starting point for a good performance, I feel. And I think that Jürgen Klopp should be saying that should be the way that we go about entering and starting games from now until the end of the season, to be honest with you. And listen, Liverpool weren't at their best. We've seen them play better this season, but I think it was a building block between now and the end of the season. It was a building block getting the win away from Atalanta. Nobody wanted to hear that at the time, but it was something for Jürgen to tell the lads going into this game. And then obviously the manager's got big cojones, changed out six players going into this game and stuff. And that was massive, because actually when you think back to a couple of months ago, Liverpool were changing the team all the time. Uh-huh. You know, the likes of Conor Bradley was just coming in, and Tsimikas was playing, and Gomez was switching sides, and Endo was in, obviously McAllister, Jones, McConnell, Clark, Nunes, all these players. And everything, he just seems to have the Midas touch then. Everything he did was working. The last couple of weeks, it's felt, this is going to be the side. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the performance has sort of dropped off a little bit because Pete tired legs and stuff. Whereas you reintroduce a brand new midfield in Endo, Gravenberg, and Harvey Elliott, and you see the level and in their legs just sort of go up, and Liverpool were able to build on that and just sort of dominate more as the game went on.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get Chloe first and then Dan's sort of opinion, because you guys were at the ground, went to the game. I didn't know this until watching Matt today, but that was, as Chris mentioned, six changes from the last league game. That's the most Klopp's ever made between league games of football for Liverpool. What was your sense of the reasoning behind the changes, and how did you feel about it at the time?
The last couple of weeks, it just looked like Liverpool have hit a little bit of a brick wall. It's like they've run out of steam. And sometimes that's no fault of the fact that you've just been overachieving with the hand that you've been dealt. Mm-hmm. And it did just look like a lot of them were a little bit exhausted, both mentally and physically, because look, it's really hard to go up against Manchester City and now Arsenal as well. And we were odds on to win the Europa League. Everyone had us as favourites. We should not have gone out of that competition. And yet we put in an absolute ridiculous performance at home, and that's what cost us. As for the team, I think me and you were really, really calm about it, weren't we? There was quite a lot of people flapping it on the coach, I will not lie. Like, there was loads of people like, have you seen this team? Are you sure it's correct? And it's like, lads, the midfield three that you had the last 2 weeks hasn't been working. Yeah. So I sat there and I was like, I'm happy to see a new midfield, because hopefully they can raise the level of everyone else, and also other people can get some rest. But yeah, I saw it as an opportunity for those lads, a bit of excitement to see the likes of Ryan Gravenberch back, who I do rate, and I don't think we've seen the best of. So yeah, I was excited to see that team, and I just thought the last 2 weeks, nothing else has really worked that we've been putting out, so we might as well change it up and see what they give us.
Did you see it as fresh legs or like kicks up the arse?
A combination of the two, to be honest with you, because I think both were probably needed. Fresh legs, most definitely, because recent performances have been a little bit pedestrian, I would say, and just a little bit sluggish in the way we've gone about our business, lacking that intensity that makes us so special, makes us so unique. So I think it needed freshening up. But I think also, players haven't been performing particularly well, some of the ones who were taken out of the firing line yesterday. And I think if you're putting it in every day in training, which we don't see obviously a lot of time, let's say Ryan Gravenberch, use him as an example, let's say he's training really well, never getting his opportunity. At some point, you've got to just say, okay then, because otherwise kind of he might get a bit demoralised, like why am I working so hard in training, I'm never going to get a game, and the lads haven't been doing the business on the pitch. So I see it as a little bit of both. As I say, I think a bit of a kick up the arse, a bit of a bloody nose for some of the lads who weren't included in the starting lineup, but also a bit of a reward for some of those who have been waiting patiently in the wings to get the opportunity, because they've been watching on thinking, I could do better than that, I could play better than this, I could do this, I could do that, so go on then. And it worked because it was justified, wasn't it? I think it was a brave call from Klopp, as much as I was at peace with it and I was more than happy and I'd like to see the changes. I think it was a bit of a Europa League midfield, really, wasn't it, in a lot of senses, but it was vindicated and it paid off for him. I think we've all waxed Liverpool in recent weeks about the squad and the fact we've got all these players back now, but we haven't really seen it come to fruition yet. We did yesterday.
Yeah, it's actually interesting you mentioned that. It's like a Europa League 11. It feels like if that game had been, it feels like we had a choice of two teams for those two games almost, and we had to decide which one we were really going for. And look, fair play, going for the Europa League, that made sense at the time, because it was still there technically to progress in. There was a piece of silverware or a chance at silverware that was on the line, but the problem is when you shoot for that and you miss, you're then left with the team. But this is not the Liverpool of years ago, where, you know, we were having a laugh, we were talking about some derby moments in the office before, the team where we picked Pedro Quiroga in the six for the Merseyside derby. I remember having Si Fletcher working for us, his head went in a massive way, but you know that was Klopp trusting his team. This is not that. He's trusting you know, Dutch international, under 21 internationals in Gravenberch, you know, one of England under 21 star footballers in Harvey Elliott in the midfield, Endo we've all taken to our hearts. So yeah, it does show for the first time in ages we've actually been able to flex our squad muscles. And but do you think it was, it is vindicated, do you agree in saying that the decisions, ultimately we've won the game, so it was the right call to me?
Yeah, 100% it was. Yeah, and if it's acted in two senses, it's obviously allowed us to win the game of football, which is the first and foremost thing. But if it has put a bit of a rock up the arse of the likes of Salah, Darwin Nunes in particular, then even better. Like, it's a double bonus, isn't it? It's a double win. So yeah, I think it was absolutely the right call to make, because ultimately, it's a strange, I mentioned upstairs to you in the office before, when I was watching it, we started the game really well, which is unheard of in Liverpool senses in recent weeks in particular. But I was watching it.
We didn't concede.
Which was great in itself. And I must admit, though, halfway through I was thinking, we're playing really well here, I wonder how good we'd be with Salah in. Like, it's one of them, because you do miss him when he's not there, despite his lack of form. But ultimately, when it boils down to it, like, big calls, brave calls from Jurgen Klopp, 100% to drop the big hitters, but the big hitters haven't been playing like big hitters, so what have we got to lose? You know what I mean? It's one of them.
There's a third thing to consider here, and that is he hasn't had the squad to be able to rotate midweek for midweek, weekend for weekend.
Yeah.
And you know, when you've got two games a week between now and the end of the season and stuff, and you've got the squad available to you, we'll probably see the close to the Atalanta side against Everton, because it's then Saturday morning and the weekend side becomes the weekend side for a little bit, and he's just not had those options.
Yeah, no, definitely. And look, there's just a thing, isn't there, where you're trying to get a squad to buy into your principles, and you're going to get them to buy into pulling in the right direction and work dead hard and give everything in training, and I'll reward the lads who work hardest and they've got the best abilities. But if the lads who are the what we call the first teamers, and look, Szoboszlai's in that, Salah's in that, Nunes is in that, we've seen that consistently throughout the season, if they're not in good form and they're knackered and you're still not picking the other lads, then you can't keep those other lads on side. So you have got to, and that's the trade-off with Klopp, is that every now and again you've got to go and pick a team that most of us would raise our eyes at and go, well, why are you doing that? And you've got to go and put trust in them, because doing that allows you to get buy-in from those guys all season long. It's rewarding them for being ready to go at the drop of a hat. So I thought it was totally
just quickly on that. And someone like Gravenberch, we don't know this inside out obviously, but it feels like he in particular needs that, because obviously he's left Bayern Munich on the back of not getting footy. So if all of a sudden, if he's training really, really well week in, week out, day in, day out, and not playing, at some point you're going to come to a tipping point with somebody like Phil. And that's, you know, he can't hold all the power, of course not, but you're right, when the midfield isn't performing and you've got Ryan Gravenberch sat waiting in the wings just not getting a kick, at some point you've got to make that change.
Yeah, it's only second start, that wasn't it? Since
exactly, which is crazy. Yeah.
And he's very much like almost like the last choice, I think, in midfield. So there's a point, man, as well. But yeah, absolutely. But he's, that might be like that. There's a chance that's almost like his last game of the season. You know what I mean? Because you might just have to go foot to the floor with your truly best and tried and tested lad. No, I'm not sure that is necessarily the case, because of five subs, we will undoubtedly see a little bit more of Gravenberch if he stays fit. But he might not get another start now for the rest of the season. Now, it might start next weekend because, as Chris makes the point, we might see a little bit of rotation through this week. So yeah, give him the game and let him run, because the worst thing that could happen, I made this point last night, Chris, on a video, is
they put him up front.
Yeah, yeah.
He actually did something the strikers haven't been able to do.
But think about how one of the reasons we fucked it in 13-14 was not so much just Gerrard falling over. It was we then had to rely on Iago Aspas, who had barely kicked the ball for us because the manager just didn't fancy him, didn't trust him. So he was rusty as anything. You don't want a situation now where if we have another couple of injuries, like the final game of the season or the penultimate game, and you've got to drop Gravenberch in and he's not touched the football in a month, well, then you're going to undo your chances. So, yeah, the whole thing.
Also, the other thing is, as well, with everybody getting back, hopefully the form does improve. The lads like Trent Alexander-Arnold will be better for having a bit of match fitness yesterday and all that type of stuff. When those lads are naturally playing better, you get to flex your muscles in terms of the squad because you're up in games more. You know, you're not behind, not chasing games, so your hands aren't tied there. So, hopefully that does have that impact. It does mean that we get to go ahead a couple of goals ahead and make substitutions for the players rather than trying to get back into a game like we've seen.
Again, ultimately it's good if it doesn't work. And I think, Chloe, my issue with it during the first half was I couldn't unpick that game from the games that had gone before and the general sense of disappointment. So when we then get leveled, when it levels up and they equalise, there is a little bit more sort of stress and anxiety around the whole situation. Whereas it's funny because the game in isolation and the performance in isolation and the ultimate result, it's fine. It's just a standard way of Jurgen Klopp doing things. But you know, Chris used the word cojones before. We've all talked about, a lot have been talked about the bravery of Klopp to make those decisions or the psychology behind them. It was actually, in many regards, a very standard sort of Liverpool performance away from home.
Yeah, it was. I mean, like we mentioned earlier, Liverpool started really quickly. Diaz over the top, getting in behind. That was the ball that happened a couple of times there. And if the likes of Jota or someone could have took the shot first time, you think maybe actually we could have been 1-0 up. We score a goal. I don't think the goal helps because obviously it's a brilliant goal, but it's not from open play.
Yeah.
And everyone was so focused on that. And it felt like you kind of maybe needed a bit of magic, someone to unlock something like that. And also, it doesn't help when, look, I thought the performance was much, much better, but for their goal, we're still losing individual battles. And that needs, that can't happen, especially, you know, right before half-time. But the way we reacted was brilliantly, because we could have gone into half-time, they're absolutely livid with ourselves, down, you know, wanting to hide from that. And instead, we came out, we turned up the tempo, we put the intensity in there, we started winning the ball higher up the pitch, we got closer to them. And look, there was a couple of players where won't mention who were absolutely superb, because I'm pretty sure we'll speak about them. But it was just a game where Liverpool, in recent weeks, when Liverpool, even at home against Crystal Palace, you've felt the roar at times in the stadium, but you don't feel a goal's coming.
Yeah.
No matter the amount of chances we have, you don't feel a goal's coming. Yesterday in that away end, in the second half, the start of the second half, the crowd got even better because our away end was brilliant all game.
Can I ask a question?
But it felt like a goal was coming for Liverpool.
Can I ask a question? Obviously, we weren't there. Do you think Liverpool maybe needed a game away from home?
Yeah.
And away from the Anfield crowd.
Less stress. Yeah, I think so, because obviously you're inside the stadium, there's 50,000 of you who are all really wanting the Reds to win, and you put the groans, everything that doesn't go right, the frustration gets ramped up, and it's because you're in a title race, and it just gets to that moment where there's just far too much stress. And sometimes fans, as a fan, you fume at everything because you feel it slipping away from you in front. Fulham fans were absolutely crap, by the way. They didn't sing at all for their team, but our away end was bouncing.
Yeah.
You had the Jota song, you had the Luis Diaz song bouncing when Liverpool just weren't playing brilliantly, but also playing poorly. And the fact that there wasn't 50,000 people groaning at a misplaced pass really might have helped them.
They were groaning, by the way, just, you know, they couldn't hear them.
but it takes away, I think the Anfield thing's interesting because it takes that the flags conversation out for another week. You know, I mean, we can revisit that, you know, and that's the thing. But you're not worrying about creating an atmosphere, you know. And you're right, there's a pressure ramping up at Anfield, because we talked about through the week how it doesn't feel like we're challenging for a title at Anfield.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel. 13-14 was a live event. You know what I mean? Like every single week was, what can we do to make this team feel loved and supported? We're going to throw everything at it. And, you know, and the other seasons where we've been good and run it well, we've had good European runs as well in the Champions League to add in, 18-19 was a great one in that. And we haven't kind of got that thing going for us as well. So it's felt a bit limp, but it goes back to that pressure thing. You know, there must be so many season ticket holders, and I count myself amongst them, who are just thinking, I just need to see that league title. I need to so it's more, you know, we're too scared of what we've got to lose rather than what we could gain by kind of throwing in on
I
it.
Also think you can feel that when Liverpool actually go 1-0 up in a game at Anfield as well, because at 0-0 you've got nothing to lose, but you've got something to fight for. At 1-0 with 10 minutes to go, you can feel the nerves because you've got something to lose.
That's natural, but that is, like, you just feel it.
1-0 with a handful of minutes to go. When the friggin' hell's...
I know, that's not actual.
1-0 down. 1-0 in 2 minutes is more
like... 1-0 with... Yeah, 1-0 down with 35 minutes to go in the first half. Yeah. And you were the nerves really sort of kick in. Yeah. Let's talk Trent. Stick with you, Chloe. Wow. I mean, the free kick's amazing. I want to talk about the timeline that leads up to it, because... the Fulham fans were laughing at Harvey Elliott. Yeah. We were having a bit of like, oh God, he's taking one off Trent and he's at the wall. And then Trent came out post-match and said, we'd done the video analysis and we found out that they jump too much basically during free kicks. So Harvey tried it and they didn't jump enough. And then Klopp described it as saying Elliott had about 15% of Trent's ultimate free kick, because when they then take the next one, they don't jump as high because they're aware that we could try that move again. So yeah, as much as it's like Trent's taking a free kick and he's taking a brilliant free kick, it's actually, I really enjoyed the story around it as well. It felt like actually again a living, breathing, worked opportunity, as well as being an individual piece of brilliance.
Yeah, and it also goes to show that the players also respect each other's individual quality, because from that left hand side, Harvey Elliott taking a free kick off Trent is pretty much unheard of. And yet, due to the fact that we thought the percentages of scoring was higher, you know, we've been able to pass off responsibility, and Harvey Elliott's in brilliant form as well. So yeah, it's good to see that actually us trying something and it going horrifically wrong actually helped us to score a goal the second time around. And like you said there, Trent still has to do all the hard work. The technique is unbelievable. Those boots look great.
they were.
An important point.
They work for him, not for you.
Not for me, less so, yeah. Less so.
But
let's
yeah.
Let's tell that story in a moment.
But yeah, it was a brilliant free kick. And also you could see the relief from the team from that free kick, from the way they celebrated as well.
Yeah. You tried the boot on last week, right?
Yeah, I tried the boot on, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did that go for you?
Right-footedly, fine. My left foot just for standing on.
Okay.
Yeah, awesome. No use whatsoever.
yeah. Anyway, there were an event, a Trent event last week.
Yeah.
It was like a volley challenge thing, wasn't it?
No, I didn't know. Only a couple of people did, didn't they?
Yeah. I think there was about maybe four or five winners.
All day.
It was hard, like, to be fair. Yeah.
Did you win anything?
No. Came away with pride intact. Is that right?
That's enough. And those any skills thing. Yeah, there's a bar. It's like people who play poker. I always say, don't be the first one out. If you can be, you know, if you can hold your own and have a game of it, then you've done all right. And that, as long as you've not gone and made an absolute mockery.
No,
yourself,
exactly. And no one fell over. Nothing like that. No. Fine. Yeah.
You did better than me last time I played at Anfield.
Did you go for a tumble? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Did you?
Oh yeah.
Chris was pretty pissed. on Trent, Chris, what I love about him, and mentioned the post-match interviews, is one on the pitch for Sky was great. There was one in the tunnel, I think, with BBC that was on Match of the Day. I remember interviewing him ahead of Kiev, and he was obviously he's a teenager at the time, and he was just so shy. And he was just so young, and of course he was, but he wasn't like, he wasn't outgoing, wasn't big with the eye contact, wasn't like, didn't have loads of personality. And you see that with a lot of teenagers, where you've got more personality with your mates than you have in other environments. But he has come back onto the pitch for us. And okay, we've seen it in flashes because he's got to get his match sharpness up, but he's 25 years old. This is prime Trent Alexander-Arnold we're seeing now. He looks broader, he looks faster, he looks more confident, he's feeling himself on and off the pitch. The way he talks in interviews now, he's got personality, he's laughing at stuff, he's being self-reverential, you know, self-deferential in what he's doing. He looks ready to really step up to the mantle of what I think he is, and that's one of the best players on the planet.
Yeah, he'll have been chomping at the bit while he's been out, won't he? And he'll have seen that his team needs him and what he can bring, and he's obviously seen Conor Bradley and the brilliant performances that he's put in, and he'll just have been like, I can't wait to get out there and show everyone what I can do and remind them, because we do forget very, very quickly what a player can do. But Trent's a leader in that squad now, isn't he? Of course. And you know, Trent wasn't like Jude Bellingham is. Jude Bellingham comes out at 28 years old and talks like he's a 30-year-old fella who's been around the block forever, you know. But Trent, it's taken a little bit of time, but he feels confident in himself. And you know, I think, you know, the likes of Henderson and Milner leaving there has left a vacuum for him to sort of fill up and stuff like that within the squad, within his role and stuff. And he just looks like a player who wants to go out there and win another league for Jurgen Klopp, and he wants to drive the team on himself, and he's absolutely fine with the weight of responsibility on those broad shoulders that you mentioned, because he's probably and ready to go, and he wants it more than anybody out there.
Van Dijk is desperate for it, but Van Dijk plays centre half, and I know technically Trent plays about 10 yards away from him theoretically, but the areas of the pitch Trent can get in, the skill set that he brings, means that he's more likely to have a direct impact on that. He's got a greater skill set geared towards winning football matches. And what I actually liked in amongst that was, it was his BBC interview, and he basically just said the three-horse race, it's dead exciting. And I love that. Like, Danny, you know, like that, you know, wasn't like, he could have been like
admitting to watching the Arsenal game and stuff like that.
You know, he could have been very like, you know, like footballers do. Well, you know, one game at a time and it's serious. He's like, nah, it's a laugh, this. I'm playing for my favourite team. I'm a vice captain. I don't know, he's not saying this, but, you know, I'm in the prime of my career. I'm back in the team. And we're in, I'm involved in the most exciting title race ever, and I've got a chance to help my team win it. Who wouldn't live for those kind of moments? I found that really uplifting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's been very relaxed about the whole thing, hasn't he? He's feeling very comfortable with himself right now, which is a real sort of scary prospect for our rivals, because as you say, he has the power, so much ability, he possesses so much talent, it's quite frankly ridiculous. And he's been like that for a long time this season. He was the one earlier on this year saying we're going for the quadruple, because why not? You know what I mean? Something that hasn't happened, of course. Yeah. And he obviously mentioned, I think, five finals to go. I think at the weekend he speaks what we're all thinking, essentially, and that's because he is one of us. He is just a fan of Liverpool Football Club. He just happens to be in a position to actually influence matters on the pitch, which is different from us. But yeah, I think he's been real breath of fresh air in the way he's come out this season. He's taken the vice captaincy on board, and he's really sort of rang with it as well. And having him back, I think Jurgen Klopp spoke about the difference between him and Conor Bradley. No disrespect to Conor Bradley, who was absolutely exceptional. Trent's a different beast altogether. Mm-hmm. Like a different beast altogether. There's just different ways of doing this. And he possesses so much ability. Like I say, he could be that difference maker between us potentially winning all five games. Whether that means win the league or not is a different matter. But he could influence us and push us forwards to doing just that.
One of the things I loved from him yesterday, and it doesn't end up in a goal, but it does end up in the big chance of the first half, is obviously he's involved in the build-up playing. He goes central to create that box midfield, yada yada yada, but then he just has the confidence to just drift out wide while they're playing with it. And obviously I think it's Diaz maybe to Elliot, and Elliot just knocks that ball back into what used to be the David Beckham territory from crosses, and he just stands there on his own, and he knows that if the ball comes to him, he knows exactly where he's putting it, and it's a great ball in for Luis Diaz, who's unlucky not to the header. Yeah,
really, wasn't it?
And it's just he's not rushing things, he's just giving himself a little bit of time, a little bit of space, knowing full well that he's got the ability to knock that ball in when it comes back. And Elliot knows exactly what he's doing. He's weighted that pass perfectly for Trent and knows what he's put it with instructions, Annie. Yeah. The pass has instructions on it, and Trent needs no invitation to whip a ball into the box.
Yeah, and you know, I made the Gerrard comparisons a couple of times, particularly earlier on this season when he was unleashed into midfield more and more, you know, being allowed to go and grab games by the scruff of the neck. This wasn't that. This was such a controlled, measured performance. But there was a thing about Gerrard in his prime. Look, different footballer, so I'm not saying it's a direct comparison as such. But what where it is when you see elite footballers and they've got enough experience under their belt to marry with the innate talent and all the things they've trained along the way, and things just become, they look utterly effortless. And that's the thing you're saying there. Trent can just stand in a position and know what to do when a ball arrives at him. So when you see Gerrard in the FA Cup final in 2006, it's a ludicrous goal that, you know, they get it to extra time. But it's the, by that point, Gerrard could just hit stuff, and he's not aiming for the bottom corner, but you're so good and you're so well versed in what you do, you're just swinging what feels like swinging a boot at it is actually a mechanical process.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what feels like we're getting back from Trent now, and you can see the impact De Bruyne has had coming back into the Man City side. And it won't be quite as pointed as that, because he's still playing, you know, 20 yards, 25 yards or more deeper on the pitch, but that's what we're getting back into that side. It's a creator supreme who's got an absolute hunger as well. So yeah, absolutely thoroughly enjoyed seeing that. I thought he was rightful man of the match. Anyone else?
No, I like Gakpo and Diaz.
Gakpo for me.
Yeah.
Fuck you, then.
Did he get man of the match, Trent? On,
yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gakpo scored a goal though, didn't he?
Very true. Yeah. Gakpo deserving but score. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Deserved one. What a save that was.
Well, we'll come to Gakpo in a sec. I want to do Elliot and Grav and Birch. Probably worth a joint conversation here, Chloe. We talked a little bit about Grav and Birch before, but I thought so much about the game hung on them two and how they performed, and whether it was by instruction or whether it was just a stepping up and a bit of bravery or whatever in the second half. I thought they had both had a good first half from a Jurgen Klopp archetypal midfield display, in that they never let anyone get past them. They were back doing the dirty work, the defensive work. A couple of times both of them individually got back and won tackles and shut the door. And particularly for someone like Gravenberch, I know Elliot will do that now. He's proven that over the last year, 18 months. But I was unsure about Gravenberch. I worried a little bit for his overall understanding of the role, whereas they both did that. But actually the game swung in the second half when either we started trusting them with the ball more, or they started trusting themselves a bit more, and they both started to get involved and get around the edge of the 18-yard box. And ultimately that's where Gravenberch's goal comes from. It's actually the two of them combining and being dangerous. But yeah, it was a really interesting game for both of them, and I made up that they were able to sort of, because I think if they could have been hauled at half time, there might have been a temptation at 1-1. Maybe some people watching at home would have done that, but I thought, yeah, it was good on them and really important for them to go and turn it around.
Yeah, it was. And I think in the first half specifically with Gravenberch, there was one moment where he absolutely sells Fulham's entire midfield by just letting the ball run across him and him getting after it. And you wanted more of that at half time. I was saying we need someone who's going to get on the ball here and just drive at them. And in the second half, Ryan Gravenberch did that. Harvey Elliott did that. And you see it straight away. So there was glimpses in the first half. They were getting into the right areas, but you know, in and around the box, we weren't potent, we weren't a killer. In the second half, I think Harvey Elliott has a shot pretty much straight away where he pulls it really, really far wide, but he was getting it, that was on the edge of the box. It's him arriving late, it's him being that deep line midfielder that's arriving and no one's picked him up. So there's little glimpses there. And I thought the left hand side was brilliant with Cody Gakpo, Andy Robertson, and Ryan Gravenberch. I think Andy Robbo could have also been man of the match up there as well. But that left-hand side really worked, and once they started understanding each other's roles and positions, it was, you could see the triangles that they were creating. And then Jota got involved a bit more in the second half as well, which really helped. And it was just Harvey Elliott and Ryan Gravenberch picking up the little gaps in between the midfield where they knew that if they got on the ball, they'd trust themselves to turn on it and maybe do a 1-2 and give and go. And yet the goal comes from it. Harvey Elliott, it's a brilliant ball. A lot of youngsters would not do that risky pass, because it is a risky pass in terms of you're threading it in between two midfielders to get to Ryan Gravenberch. You're trusting another youngster who in and around the area shouldn't have the time that he's allowed. And it's a lovely turn by Ryan Gravenberch. The finish is brilliant. And I think they just really, they epitomised Liverpool's performance in the fact that the more the game went on, the stronger they got, the stronger Liverpool got, and they were at the heart of that. And I think we all thought Ryan Gravenberch couldn't do 90 minutes. We weren't surprised by that. But when he came off, you saw the reception of the away end as well. And it was like, lad, you could be something special for us. Keep giving this for the last five, because there was rumours of like Galatasaray or someone interested in him. And I think Liverpool would be ludicrous to even entertain that. But it was just a performance where you just felt like, that's a lad who I was so excited about you joining us. Give us a bit more of that, please. And Harvey Elliott just deserves to be starting anyway at this moment in time, because he's one of them where you probably could, Jürgen could have lost him about a month ago when he's like, aye, lads, I've ran through brick walls for you whilst everyone else has been out injured, and now they're all back. I'm sat on a bench. Why? So, yeah, I really enjoyed their performances in the game.
I'm slightly different on Gravenberch, to be honest with you, because I thought he played well, but I thought Elliot was much better than Gravenberch, all told. I mean, for a start, like, I know Gravenberch goes off on 76, I think it is. Elliot plays the full 90, but completes about 30 passes more. You know, 27 of 30 Ryan Gravenberch was on the day in 74 minutes. That's lower than the left winger in Cody Gakpo, which shouldn't really happen. Your midfielder should be involved in more passes than your left midfield, in the left winger. Consequently, I think it was 27 of 30 for Gravenberch. I think it was 55 of 60 for Harvey Elliott, admittedly 14 more minutes and stuff. But Gakpo was much more involved on that left-hand side for me than Gravenberch. I think he did, I agree, he did definitely grow into the game, but I don't think he was actually, apart from the goal, as big a factor as some of the other players on the pitch.
What's interesting, because I did the player ranking show after the match, and goals don't have skewed perspectives on things. So I saw I had a number of people saying, oh, Harvey Elliott wasn't good, Gravenberch was better than Harvey Elliott, but you're right in that I think Harvey Elliott was much more involved, and actually I didn't know that stat about the passes, but that tells the story. Much more generally involved in the things, but he doesn't have that definitive thing that comes off.
He has a free kick that looks shit.
And a
shot that he drags completely wide.
But I would say that this is the thing about this, is that midfield, you know, you've got your eldest midfielder and your two youngest midfielders playing there for the probably the first time those three have played in a midfield three.
I didn't have a problem with Gravenberch's performance at all. I didn't. I just thought he wasn't as involved as I would like to see. If Kurt Jones was in there, he wouldn't have just had 30 passes. He would have had 60, 70. And Endo, 70-odd passes. Elliot, 60-odd passes. Gravenberch tried 30 of them. Gakpo and Robertson, for me, were the reason that the left-hand really worked. Left-hand side, sorry. And for me, again, you know, I thought Gakpo was unbelievable. And what it comes down to is, I think Robertson really likes playing with Gakpo.
They've got a really good understanding.
And they haven't had many games together over on that left-hand side either. And, you know, you could also say, if you maybe arguing against me, that Gakpo takes up a lot of the positions that Gravenberch wants to be in when he plays on that left-hand side and cuts inside and stuff. I haven't really watched Gravenberch yet, to be honest with you, and thought, God, he links well with the left winger. I've never really thought he linked well with Diaz. I haven't really seen it with Gakpo either.
He wants to take the ball inside, doesn't
he? Exactly. Yeah. And he's naturally moving himself away from the left winger. Whereas if you think of how the right-hand side works, Elliot's always looking for that right winger, whether it be Mo Salah, whether it was Luis Diaz, whether it's Trent Alexander-Arnold playing on the right-hand side. Gravenberch just is a different player. And I'm not saying I'm right here, by the way. Gravenberch's game might all be get him some space, and when he's got those opportunities, he's going to make something happen, and he did yesterday.
But look at the game last week where Curtis Jones picks the ball up in the 10 so many times in attacking situations in the second half in particular. I'm thinking of the Atlanta game. That's fine. Gravenberch actually should be getting into those positions, because if Cody Gakpo is going to fill a bit of that space and Robertson's going to be doing the stuff around the outside, well, Grav can just step in. Yeah. You know, because if those guys are making the runs and drawing people, and that was one thing Gakpo a couple of times didn't quite do, was Robertson's very good at making that run. So either you play through to him or he draws some attention, it gives you more room to work with. It's then the third knock-on effect is, where, what does that mean for Gravenberch? And look, when he crops up in the 10... He gets a shot on goal. So good. But that might require a little bit more.
I just
more
think there's well more to come from him in terms of his all round game.
Well, I agree with that. the way I looked at it was, this is a lad who I think struggled for pretty much the entirety of the season. He had a good spell when he first came in, and since then it's like he's fell off the face of the earth, to be perfectly honest. He has to play in that Carabao Cup final, not because he's picked, but because everyone else is absolutely done in. And then he gets an injury right when you really don't need him to pick up another injury. I was just happy for him more than anything. And I thought he did influence the game, not as much maybe as, like I said, Cody Gakpo and Andy Robbo were the two man of the matches for me, and consequently they're both on his side, so maybe they do make him look a little bit better on that left hand side. But for me it was just a positive and confident performance for me to say, I'm seeing sparks of you when you get into those areas, I'm seeing what you like when you actually trust yourself to turn and go the other way and take a defender out. I saw him running back,
he definitely showed the willingness to run back,
and I saw him running back, and I saw him down that right hand side when Iwobi in the first half was getting away a couple of times. I saw him get back, and I saw Harvey Elliott also do the same. And what I just picked from it was, and maybe I didn't pick it from Harvey Elliott just in terms of Harvey Elliott, I know that's the standard I'm getting every week, I don't know that's the standard I'm getting from Ryan Gravenberch. So when it does have that, I'm more inclined to be like, okay, well let me support you and get behind you, so like you can do it again.
See how silky he is. He's clearly he's a very, very good footballer, hasn't he? He's got all the, you're right, he's got all the raw attributes, and that's just, but again, scoring a goal, he scores the most important goal of the game, ultimately. You know what I mean? So that's a moment that elevates.
Hell of a finish.
It's a brilliant finish as well.
Exactly. And the touch, you were pairing over the touch that sets it for him when we were doing the watch along, Chris, and you're absolutely right to
do that.
Just
on the passing thing, dead quickly, I think that's actually more because of the way he plays. He's more of a ball carrier than like a recycler. Mm-hmm. Where I think Harvey Elliott, a lot of the time yesterday, he kept getting into spaces, and he picks up space really, really well. He's really intelligent at that, don't get me wrong. But a lot of the time, it was like, right, Trent, right, whoever else, Gakpo, Diaz, Jota, whoever else, which is fine, by the way. I think
he had three completed dribbles.
Knocking in that. But yeah, whereas Gravenberch, his use of his body when people get tight to him is just phenomenal. He's people for their time and time. And he must have won that handful of free kicks as well on the way. Like, I thought he was really smart at that. But on the getting back and the dirty work side of things, absolutely spot on. Like, that was the one thing. All season long, even when he was really impressive earlier on the campaign, there was still that underlying feeling of he's not getting back enough, because the fundamental of playing the Jurgen Klopp side is getting back and doing that work, and that was so alien to him and so not what he wanted to do. You could tell it was almost like an afterthought, oh shit, I need to run back and help out my defence here. Whereas yesterday, for the first time, it looked like it was more natural.
Yeah, look, and Harvey Elliott knows that role inside and out as well. I was looking at it, just on the, in addition to the passes stuff, Harvey has 30 more touches of the ball, so you know, and some of that is just but we know what you get. You know what you get from Elliott. Kick the ball to him, and Harvey will take a touch,
and he always wants,
and he'll quickly move it on to the guy next to him, and then they'll run up. He facilitates Trent because he knows what you're doing. He facilitates the right hand attacker as well, etc. Yeah, it's just very encouraging from two 21-year-old lads playing in attacking midfield for Liverpool. I think it's worth remembering, and I go back to that chat first up about the archetypal doing the dirty work. Last year, 2 years ago, or 2 years ago, it was Gini Wijnaldum and Jordan Henderson doing those jobs, and now we're winning games of football with two under 21 lads who are going to get, or probably realistically, they are definitely, if nothing else, minimum double figures combined goals and assists a season. There's a chance both of them could be getting towards 10 goals a season type footballers.
Yeah, and let's not forget here, we saw Crystal Palace last week, and I think I was sitting here saying, well, this is what happens sort of when you've got like two flying fullbacks and a defensive midfielder that looks tired and stuff like that. We had the two flying fullbacks, but we had two lads who you would deem attacking midfielders, and yet we had none of the problems of last week because the two of them showed everything they had in the locker to be able to get back. There was a time of me and you were arguing on the watch along. It was Kwanzaa who went down injured, and I was saying, no, it's definitely not. I can see Gravenberch, he's in like the left back position, and you're like, well, Cody Gakpo's there, I can see him. They were both in the penalty area and stuff like that, and Elliott's back there.
Harvey Elliott was left back, Gravenberch was centre half, Gravenberch was left back. Either way, the back four that got back to defend consisted of Gravenberch and Elliott on the left side of our defence, because they'd
and
both
Elliott, and Endo was centre back as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is
this couple of mountains there.
When the next injury crisis hits, we know where we're going.
Yeah, if one cross came in there, we were knackered.
That the point to go back to the point at the top. Energy, legs, and that's a desire to go and do it. And I don't think Liverpool's players lack the desire, but as we saw last season, I said this on the podcast last week, the games preceded it felt the most like last season where you can't work out why you're getting legged, and it's just because the guys want to run, but they're reaching for the gear that doesn't exist. So yeah, great to see that from Elliot and Gavin Mage. We've talked loads about Gakpo, but I want to carry on that chat, Chloe. I just thought his resurgence continues. Mm-hmm. I was really worried for him, and I referenced it a couple of times, but I noticed in the comments early on in the game, we were getting people going, who do you think is going to get sold, whatever. People have got one eye almost on the summer, because if the season peters out, that's all you've then got to talk about. And Gakpo's a really interesting conversation, because a month ago, I was looking at him going, I just move him on and go and get someone who's a better fit for the wing or whatever, because you've got Darwin and Jota who are both number nines. He's the third choice left winger, and he's the third choice centre forward at this point, and he's not performed well in midfield for us. And you know, I'm not saying he should be pushing ahead of anyone for the first team. Maybe people might think he could do, but he's actually in the conversation all of a sudden. I think his last three performances for Liverpool, he's reminded me of what he was a year ago. And he's pacey, he's direct, he's dynamic, he's very good at holding the ball up, he's very good at carrying the ball, he changes the angles of play for us. I want us to see more Cody Gakpo like
that. He's also very good at pressing, he wins the ball back a lot as well.
He won the ball back most out of anyone on the pitch last night.
I think for Jota's goal, I think he's like in a 50-50 and he wins the ball for that. He's just brilliant. The ball at his feet when he turns and runs at an attacker, he's taken three of them out of the game. He's so good at using his body, and he deserved a goal. We all mentioned it, the shot from him right after we get the first goal, it's a really good save, but he just epitomised everything. He was up and down that wing, he was making sure he did defensive work, but going forward he backed himself, he took himself on, and if Jota was a little bit sharper, the link up play between those two would be incredible, because there were times where he's passing it into Jota and we've not took the correct touch, or we're not anticipating that pass that he's done. And yeah, he was brilliant. Him and Robbo down that left hand side caused them absolute nightmares. And it's just because Robbo takes players away and Cody Gakpo runs right into the middle of the park. And yeah, he was superb, superb. He could have got a couple more assists as well if he was a little bit quicker with his passing. But ultimately, I thought the last couple of weeks has been Liverpool's biggest, brighter spark. Mm-hmm. And once again, I thought he was man of the match. He was superb.
Yeah, I just really, really enjoy it. And this is the stage of the season where you want that competitiveness. You don't want that drop-off where lads are looking around and go, well, I know I'm not in this team, so what's the sort of point? And having seen Gakpo's season, you come a point where sometimes someone just needs a summer, or they need to be sold. And I was a little concerned over Gakpo, and it's credit to him. He's now joint third most goals and assists from a Liverpool player this season.
You could quiz 100 Liverpool fans, and not many would get that.
No.
Like yesterday, he was our third top scorer. Now Jota scored again, so he's our joint third top scorer. Now he's our fourth top scorer. But yeah, goals and assists is 19 on the season, isn't it? I mean, he's for what has been, I would say, a really underwhelming season for Gakpo.
A strange season as well.
Yeah, because he's been involved in I think it's 49 match day squads. You've got the stats up there. 49 match day squads, around about 30 odd full 90s,
31.8 full 90s.
Close. So that's a lot of full 90s for somebody, considering Jota's probably got maybe 10 less or something like that, and yet he's still having an impact and stuff like that.
10.8
less. It was close enough, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Come on. I'm trying here, mate. I just think he has been underwhelming, and yet he's got more goals than Luis Diaz, and he's got more goals and assists than Luis Diaz. Mm. And Luis Diaz had a fucking excellent season.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, his reaction to when we score is absolutely superb. I think we've all seen the fact that he's absolutely hugging Jota, but he's given everything to our away end there for that goal as well. For Ryan Gravenberch's goal, he's given it everything. Our players walk away and Cody Gakpo's turning around and telling us to get up for it. And I just love that.
You need confidence to do that, don't
you? You do, but you also, these are lads that actually are keeping you out the team, or have kept you out the team in Diogo Jota, that is, this season. And sometimes you can sit there and be like, can he just have a couple of bad games so I can show what I'm worth? And instead it was, no, I'm going to support you. I'm getting behind you. Mm. And like, he was giving it loads. He knew what it meant to us as fans there in that stadium, and he loved it.
I'm forever shocked by the camaraderie between Elliot, Gravenberch, Jones, Szoboszlai. These lads are all in competition for places in the football team, and they're all best mates. Yeah. They're all losers. They all make a beeline for each other. And I'm funny because my initial reaction with the Gravenberch goal was Elliot ran off to sell, to sort of, I don't know whether he ran off the screen anyway, whatever he was, I don't know. And then obviously the cameras then go and show replays or whatever. It wasn't until afterwards that I saw them doing like a mad handshake thing. But I got a bit like, sort of like Fresh Prince and Carlton vibes a bit off them. I like, you know what I mean? Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. But
what did you make of Trent then? Because he ran off before the ball had even hit the net to celebrate on his own four times. He did aeroplanes and shushes and cups of tea and all kinds.
Yeah. Let Trent have his moments.
What was the cup of tea about?
Just hit all the buttons at once, I think, on FIFA and all the celebrations came.
What was the cup of tea about, though?
No idea.
It was the other end, what's that?
That's none of my business. Is that what he meant?
He ran off doing that first, didn't he? He did all kinds of stuff.
Have you seen Virgil for Gravenberch's goal?
Oh yeah, it's brilliant.
As Gravenberch takes his first touch, literally
he's got his back out of his feet,
and Virgil's like that, arms in the air. He hasn't even looked like he's going to shoot yet by the time Virgil's got his hands in the air.
He's literally not. He's got his back to goal, and Virgil Van Dijk's got his hands up in his
ear. They are like a faction, aren't they? You know what I mean? Like a wrestling faction. It's like
nation.
Yeah, exactly. It's the Rock coming back to Italy, the bloodline. It's like he's looking at Gravenberch. He's like, yeah, it's just what he does. I know he's this good.
Also, he came out of absolutely nowhere and nearly wiped out Ryan Gravenberch in those celebrations. Like Luis Diaz is just so calm next to Ryan Gravenberch. People hugging Ryan Gravenberch, and all of a sudden this man mountain just pushes everyone out the way. And it goes to show how much he wants it as well, being just the captain. Yeah,
just on that as well, that was his first Premier League goal as well. And obviously he probably hasn't had the greatest of last few weeks, months, whatever you mentioned, second starting, however long. Like, that just shows you how much it meant to Gravenberch first and foremost, because he absolutely loved it. But his teammates, the camaraderie between them and the harmony, they were buzzing for him as well, which is boss to see, because
that tells me, sorry to interrupt, that tells me that he's working dead hard in training.
Exactly. Yeah. And also the start might do exactly the same thing, because I mentioned earlier on, like, there's lads not performing. Gravenberch and chomping at a bit and performing really, really well in training, putting the hard yards in. Klopp's rewarded him and he's paid him back.
It's just amazing to see. And, you know, I always thought with him he was a calculated punt, I think, in the transfer market, that one that opened up to us. He's not had a pre-season with the football club as a result of that, so like, he's had to do his learning on the pitch and obviously in training. But when you play twice a week or three times a week, you don't train. It's well known that you just recover and you do a little bit of analysis and then you're back out to playing again. So he hasn't had that kind of run up, and obviously the same with Endo as well. But he was such smart business, because if you're going to change how you play, don't put it all on one lad. Get another, someone who can help you come out. And he's helped us tick over this season, he really has, and he's been a little bit unlucky. Yeah, it felt like he was just ready to maybe seize his opportunity around the cup final. So I'm grateful that he's come back in and done it. But it's his fourth goal of the season, which is, you know, when you think of him in terms of the pecking order, he is behind Szoboszlai, Jones, Elliot, and McAllister. You know, and I think that's right.
Yeah.
And that's where he is. And that's kind of where he's been bought for, but with the potential to kick on and hopefully grab that place off someone else along the line. I just think you never know what happens
when a new manager comes in, do you? Maybe you shift to two DMs and all of a sudden that advanced role actually might suit Gravenberch more than anybody else. And, you know, it might play with three midfielders, but again, it might be weighted slightly more to Gravenberch. So it's going to be an interesting summer for him with who comes in and what they think of him. Because whoever comes in will know who Ryan Gravenberch is and what he's done in the past and what type of a player he is. So yeah, it's very, very interesting summer for a lot of lads, but him especially.
Lastly on Diogo, obviously we've kind of talked around it. The biggest compliment I can almost pay to Diogo Jota, Chloe, is that he just buys a ticket. He'll always have one. He's very aware of the, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, that kind of stuff. And whereas it's not the cleanest strike and it's not the goal he doesn't cover himself in glory,
Jota's playing centre forward, he gets himself a shooting opportunity and he kicks it at the goal, and there's just something to be said sometimes for just performing to the percentages.
It's like the most Diogo Jota game you can imagine, because he's anonymous for like literally 90% of the minutes that he plays, and then all of a sudden he's throwing on goal, he's on his weaker foot, his left foot, and yeah, he just still scores it. And that is Diogo Jota. You don't need him to be involved in the game for absolutely everything. Where we look at, you know, Roberto Firmino or Cody Gakpo towards the end of last season, they were at the heart of everything good that Liverpool did. Diogo Jota doesn't need that. Diogo Jota just needs you to get him in a position where he's one-on-one with the keeper, and he's in a goal-scoring opportunity, and he's got an actual chance. Because in the first half, I don't think even the chances that fell to him, they were half chances here or there. He didn't have an out-and-out one on one, and he gets that chance and he absolutely slots it away. And yeah, it's just Diogo Jota, he just is so, so clinical. And hopefully, you know, I don't think he was sharp for the majority of that game, but you've got the confidence of him getting a goal back, the confidence of Liverpool finally scoring from open play, and feeling like for Darwin Nunes and Mo Salah, not just is that a kick up the arse, but it's also a thank God that someone else has also scored as well. And yeah, the more confidence we can get in all of them, the better. But yeah, Diogo Jota's just, he's inevitable at times. You just get him in those positions and 9 times out of 10, he's running away celebrating.
Yeah. I love the fact that he doesn't rush to go inside on his right foot, because he could quite easily try and get across the defender there and get it onto his good foot, or his other good foot, but his better foot, I think that's fair to say. And what you do is, you obviously, everyone knows, you bring the defender back into it, even if he's just pouring at you, trying to disrupt you, trying to get a little leg around you or whatever. Jota's just got so much confidence in either foot that he just goes, well, if I carry on going in this trajectory right now, the defender's not going to catch me. I'm going to have to hit it left footed. I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that. Like, and I actually think, you know, I don't think Leno's expected to save it, because it's so low. It's along the floor. He should do better, having got a hand to it. But I think that it's all in there. He calculated it beforehand and he goes, I'm not going onto my right foot, I'm going on my left. I'll hit it hard, I'll hit it low.
Some footballers just have that quality. You think about the amount of stuff that Darwin Nunes has just blammed at the goal, and it should be unsavable, and goalkeepers find these wrists and ankles of absolute iron and manage to, you know, stand resolute, and then every now and again a goalie just has those sort of like, you know, like wet spaghetti hands and let it go through. But you know, some footballers just have that kind of look, and Jota's definitely one of those. He's a bundler. He's a very untidy footballer.
Me and Josh were having a conversation on last week's deep dive, and you know, I disagree with Josh on a few things, and one of them is shots on target. Like he cited a fucking paper that was done years ago about like how, you know, shots on target really doesn't matter. You took two footballers' stats, one of them misses loads, one of them hits the target loads. Now the one who missed the target actually scores more goals, because he's generally, this through this paper he mentioned, was he aims for the corners and stuff. But like, if you get the ball on target, you are asking a question of the keeper. And I just think, like, you know, for the conversation, you should probably guess, was around Darwin Nunes. But Jota doesn't do that. Jota just hits the target. Salah just hits the target a lot of the time. He's a bit of a bundler in terms of finishing and stuff like that. Now, every player is different. I would say to Darwin Nunes, hit the fucking target more, mate, and you'll score more goals. Jota doesn't need that, but there are other players, of course, who just do go for the top corners and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. Best of the best. As you said, Robbie Fowler was I've got to hit the inside net, and that's me mission, and he's good enough to do it. It's funny, isn't it, because it's like the whole hitting the post is not a shot on target, it's a shot off target. And a lot of people go, I had a story like Roy Hodgson was absolutely baffled by that as a concept, because like he sees it's like, well, it's pretty good if you hit the target. But it's funny, isn't it, how there's just some players, it's a Mighty Ducks line, but like, you know, if you said Gordon Bombay says, you know, he hits the post in the championship game as a kid, and he said if it was just a quarter of an inch to the right, it had gone in. And the kid, Charlie, says if it was a quarter inch to the left, you'd have missed the goal completely. And some footballers are like that. Some footballers are, Luis Suarez does nothing but hit the woodwork in his first season for Liverpool, and you're like, well, this guy, has he got it? Turns out no, he was just fine shooting, and then everything started going in. So there's an interesting thing where Jota, you're right, Jota isn't that. Jota's just a guy who will just, he has that X factor that just says things are just going to, things will just find a way of working their way into the back of the net for them. Whereas Darwin feels like that guy who's either going to miss the goal completely, or it's going to come in off, it's going to hit the top bin. There's absolutely no in between for him. But just grateful for Diogo Jota to get back on the score sheet, because it means we've got more stuff to talk about when we're talking about our team selection for the Merseyside derby in the next part. Just lastly on the game then, the subs, our list of substitutes onto the pitch: Darwin Núñez, Alexis McAllister, Mo Salah, Joe Gomez and Dominic Szoboszlai. And I will just move Joe Gomez out of this conversation because he didn't really do much. Everyone else who came on the pitch.
Taking Szoboszlai out then as well.
Yeah. Everyone else
he was fucking shit.
Well, that was my point. Well. Every single one of our substitutes who came on the pitch was fucking rubbish. Terrible. They were absolutely rubbish. Salah was rubbish. Núñez was rubbish. McAllister was rubbish. And Szoboszlai was absolutely rubbish.
If I remember from last night, McAllister at least completed 6 of 6 passes. Szoboszlai completed 1 of 5 at a 20% rate.
I don't know how that would work, given that he passed the ball directly to them and had their account and a second opportunity
Núñez was the one though. Like, we had 0 offsides up until the point that Núñez came on.
Oh yeah,
and 20 about, seconds
offside,
was he?
Oh, could you straight away
10 looks, yards.
Oh, honestly, and I think there's another one, wasn't there, that it's infuriating
literally later
properly. Salah chance came for one of them, but I said Núñez offside. Forget about all of this that's about to happen. Yeah. Núñez is offside.
But also,
6 of 7 passes from
him. They do update them. Because I just looked at Gravenberch's again, and he was 28 of 31. Then
talking about doesn't hit the target from those offside positions. He still hit the side net the outside of the goal.
So that first shot was
missed.
Yeah.
Okay, Sal.
Yeah, that thing, yeah.
Salah tried a back heel that didn't come off either. He's just not happening, is it?
Yeah.
It's just not happening for him. Or Darwin, for that matter.
Yeah.
I can laugh about it, though, because we've won at this moment.
Yeah,
so
obviously, yeah.
I won't be laughing about it, maybe.
Every now and again, and probably too much over the last 5 years, we've made Space Jam references, and I'm getting real Space Jammy vibes from Salah, and particularly Salah at the moment, of like, he's been the Monstars have had a little pull to one side and gone, oh, yeah, you're good at footy, aren't you? Like, well, we'll have that. And he's just sort of like stood there, this absolute shell of a footballer, like, nothing's working for him.
Every now and again, I sit there nodding along like, I've watched Space Jam, I'm going to fucking clue what you're
talking about.
Neither of them.
There's fucking two of them.
Neither of them.
Well, hang on. Forget the second one. The first one.
I'm not a big fan.
I've watched about 10 films in my life. I can categorically tell you now, Space Jam is one of the best ever.
Well, you've watched 10 films. You can't sit here and tell me that.
I am.
It's one of the best of his 10.
You can tell me it's one of the best you've seen.
Hang on, Chris. It depends. Yeah, it depends what the other 10 are. Because if The Godfather's in there, then I'm a little concerned. If you're like, you know, like Air Bud and
Ace Ventura, both.
Oh wow.
Right, okay, so there's three of your films.
Bruce Almighty. If Jim Carrey's in them, I'm interested.
Okay. Right, okay.
And what's the other one I've seen?
The other one.
Mr. Penguin.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I don't think I've seen Dumb and Dumber. No, I don't think I've seen Dumb and Dumber.
Good.
Liar.
This is making my head hurt right sound. It was a throwaway reference to a film that I'm certain every one of our generation went the pictures to see.
Sounds a belter then, man.
It's awful, but it's a very, it's a cultural,
there we go,
it's a cultural milestone for all of us. Like, or at least I thought so. It's fine.
Chloe, no. LeBron? LeBron's in one of them.
The second one is.
Have you seen the second one, Dan? Ride.
Yeah, I've seen that. That wasn't anywhere near as good.
No. What was it?
It hasn't got Bill Murray or Michael Jordan. But I tell it has got Michael Jordan in.
Yeah, you can't touch the first one. The second one. I can't get it. That's mad.
I started watching and turned it off.
Really? Yeah.
I haven't even started on the proper Bill now.
You've never seen it either?
No.
I think I've rewatched it since watching the Last Dance documentary, because there's a lot of it in that documentary about Michael Jordan was filming that in his comeback when he came back to be a basketball player. So he built himself a court on the lot, movie lot, where he was filming. So overnight, when they finished filming at like 11 at night, he'd practice basketball and he'd get his mates in to come and play with him so he could get himself sharp to get back in the NBA. So it is quite funny watching,
is it? Is it better or worse than Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
It's worse than Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I'm comfortable in the knowledge. I've watched the best version of like a full animated character with live action.
Have you seen Cool World?
No.
Okay.
Looney Tunes back in action? Anyone?
Wolf of Wall Street, I've seen.
Same thing. Yeah. Well, fine. You've seen. Yeah. Fine. Basically the same thing. Okay. So, look, whatever. We'll move on. We'll take a short break. We'll
Is that it?
For the Merseyside derby, when we return, we're going to work out exactly what Dan's 10 is while we're on our break.
Do you know what you should do? Watch Memento. I'd love to go back and watch Memento for the first time.
Watch Terminator 1 and then Terminator 2 in order.
I've seen either. So
oh, wild. They'd be new. Wild. Makes me, oh my God. Right, cool. Actually, don't, because you're a very diligent worker, and if you get into films, then that might stop, so don't do that. Right, Sal, break time. We'll be back in a sec.
Hello, everyone. We've got an amazing competition prize for you this month. It is this incredible Liverpool away shirt from 04-05, signed by none other than goal-scoring hero that season, Mr. Neil Mellor. Yes, if you want to be in the draw to win this, then head to redmenplus.com, sign up as a legend tier subscriber, or upgrade from a captain tier and get your name in the hat at the end of the month for this wonderful signed Liverpool shirt. See you there.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Yes, perfect time to jump on redmenplus.com, where we've got a code that won't get you access to the competition this month, but it will get you full access to all of the podcasts and videos. If you use the code RACE, you will get a half price, 50% off a yearly captain subscription to redmenplus.com. So fill your boots on that. We're running that. We turned that off and then we thought, you know what? Liverpool are very much in the title race. So whilst if Liverpool keep winning, we're going to keep that offer going, which is stupid because it is a ridiculous reduction on what I think is a pretty good offer anyway. But yeah, look, regardless, we're going to keep the good vibes going. So if Liverpool can keep winning, we're going to keep our 50% offer running. The second they lose, we're going to turn it off and you're going to miss out on the chance to get a half price of podcast, videos, documentaries, the whole works. Anyway,
it's not just the title race you're getting though either. You are getting all the new manager stuff over the summer, all the transfers and pretty much all of next season as well.
That's how a year works. You're going to get all four seasons of the year. But one season issue of football. Right, we've also got new t-shirts. Look at these absolute belters. Apologies, podcast listeners. You can just go to redmanmerch.com. Microphone's hurt with this one. But the sensationally talented Abby Rudkin painted this absolute pearler of a painting that was available. And she's done prints and all that kind of stuff. And we've made a deal with her to make it into a t-shirt. It's now available on redmenmerch.com. It is Jürgen Klopp being chucked up in the air in front of a sea of cop flags. Just like she's, I said before, Abby is incredibly talented, big friend of the show as well. And I think she has excelled. I think this is the best thing she's absolutely ever done. And 100%. I am
beyond delighted that we're able to we've been able to strike this up. So if you go to redmanmerch.com, we're going to have a closer look. Doubters to Believers Tea by Abigail Rudkin is there. You can load it up and you can have a little closer look and yeah, fill your boots on all of that. It is great stuff.
Glorious.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it is glorious.
What are you muttering about?
Sorry,
it's all good. Everything is perfectly fine. Great. We're not talking about films anymore.
Okay,
we have good news. Not for now.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, sounds. Yeah, anyway, grab yourself one of these T-shirts while you can and celebrate the life and times of Jürgen Klopp at Liverpool and look boss while you're doing it as well. Okay, Merseyside derby time. We're obviously going to talk a bit more about the Evs results at the weekend against Forest and the catastrophically hilarious fallout from that based on their accusations around PGMOL on the Biased podcast, the Biased Football podcast, which follows this, which, of course, you can get half price using your half price rate code. He's okay.
Sorry, there's something else. Yeah.
Guys, I mean,
this is interesting.
Trying to teach a class and the kids are talking at the back. Go on.
West Ham, according to David Ornstein, want Ruben Amorim.
That is just broke now.
All the best.
Interesting. I thought they were linked with, is it Lopetegui? Lopetegui
yeah.
today.
Yeah,
well,
they want an ambitious move for Ruben Amorim. David Ornstein just tweeted.
Oh, great. Well, if he ends up there, then that means he's not good enough to manage Liverpool. That'll be my take on that. Anyway.
There's a lot happening.
Yeah, sounds. Right, okay, yeah, Merseyside derby. Yeah, as I said, we'll be talking more about the league on the Bias podcast, so we'll delve into the weekend. But their win over Forest, Chris, actually, hopefully, just takes a bit of the pressure off this. It's going to be a derby. It'll be a bear pit, you know, unless we really damp them down. Because why not? Because they'll be in slightly more buoyant mood. But that win was huge, and it does just mean this isn't like an absolute lifeline of a football game anymore. By all accounts, they're probably safe now, which I'm hopeful will work in our favour.
I'm hopeful that it will as well. I am also mindful of the fact that it probably won't make a blind bit of difference to them. They just want to go and stop us winning the league. Now, that's enough motivation for Everton Football Club and Everton's fans. So, yeah, for me, I hope it does sink in with the players that they're probably safe. Liverpool just need to ignore the fact that it's a derby. We need to go out there and play one of the shittest teams in the league and beat them.
I think that's got to be what it is. The issue with this, we said this going into the Old Trafford game, Chloe, is that you shouldn't be building your season around needing 3 points at Old Trafford or Goodison Park because we don't have great records. No, we don't have a terrible record at Goodison. In fact, Klopp's never lost at Goodison. He's played in his time in 7 games. That he's played at Goodison, it's 2 wins and 5 draws, but there's 4 0-0s in there. And that's the thing, is Everton will be like pigs in shit with a draw because it's a point closer to guaranteed safety, and it will probably be a point that takes a title away from us. So there's the anxiety, everyone. Let's lay it all out on the table. But hopefully more Chris's take on it than that.
Yeah, I was just trying to enjoy my Monday afternoon after Liverpool picked up a victory for the first time in like 2 weeks. In the Premier League, but yeah, here I am back to anxiety stations.
All aboard!
To be perfectly honest, I hadn't really thought about it. I said to you earlier, I went, you know, you just never know. Arsenal face Chelsea,
yeah.
You know, City have Brighton. Completely forgot that it was the Merseyside derby for me. But yeah, look, like we've mentioned, it's a Merseyside derby and Everton are going to give absolutely everything for it. But if Liverpool can somehow take it out of their hands, and if that win the other day gives Everton confidence to try and play against us and leave space for us, then hopefully that'll help us out as well. But honestly, it's a game in which Liverpool just need to forget about the opposition, forget about who they're playing, and go and attack it. Because like we've said, we've got to give everything. We've got to get 5 wins from 5 here. And they are pretty bad at football. It just, they show up against us and we sometimes play the occasion. We need to make sure we don't do that. And hopefully with a win on the back of what it is, maybe we can just go there and be a bit scrappy as well. Really, like, they love a scrappy game. They will literally nail us within the first 5 seconds. It's just that's what's going to happen. But Liverpool, have some attitude about you too. You're the bigger side, you're the bigger team, you're higher up in the league. Go and give it to them and take it out their hands, and that's what we can do.
Who is Everton's top goal scorer right now?
Decore.
Still. 6 goals. Joint with Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Yeah. And look, it's
because they've
got they're a good
probably.
Sean Dyche can organise a defence.
Yep.
So if he wants to just shut that game down, and I can't see any reason why he wouldn't, because again, to that point, a point in that thing is massive for him. A point in a Merseyside derby in those environments for someone like Dyche is 3 points psychologically, and that's the reality of it. So there's no need for him to come and be gung-ho and try and do something that's totally above his station or whatever. So expect that, and that's where I think we're going to have to call into this idea of having this deep squad, of having options off the bench. Yeah. If we can't break it down in 60, then you change it round, bring fresh legs on, and have another go at it. Does ask the question, or beg the question, Dan, in terms of what our approach is, and I think we'll come to the attackers, because I think that's where the real meat of this is. But actually, I want to start this with Wataru Endo. And is this a Wataru Endo game of football or not?
I think it might be. Yeah, I think it might be personally, because I think it is going to be scrappy, and we're going to have to sort of meet fire with fire, I think, certainly when it comes to the midfield battle. And as good as we were yesterday, and I think we did play with a lot of authority, and it was one of the better Liverpool performances certainly of recent times, but even this season, I mean, going away from home somewhere like that, albeit not a bare pit like Goodison Park, could well be. I think it's wishful thinking, like you say, to sort of expect Everton to come out and play, to be honest with you. I think they are going to go about it the way you suggested. Well, they can't. Literally, it's not in their wheelhouse to do so, which is a problem. But the fact it's not do or die helps a little bit, because maybe there might be that little bit more freedom potentially, but I'm not holding out any hope for that necessarily. But in terms of the way we go about it, I think it's tailor-made for someone like Wataru Endo, because he has quality on the ball he can offer in that department as well. But I do think we are going to have to battle and battle hard, certainly in the midfield, because they're likely, it could well be like a Decore, Onana, Gay midfield three. That is, you know, whatever you think about it, quality-wise, they're going to leave feet in. They're going to be at it, you know what I mean? So we're going to have to match that to get anything from this game. So I can't see a world whereby Wataru Endo isn't involved from the start.
Also, those games in which we have dropped points against them, Everton have been so close to counter-attacking us and actually going 1-0 up and nicking the win. Like, there have been times where we've been absolutely counter-attacked, and I think Tom Davies has missed an open net pretty much and put it the only place where the keeper could save it. So
Andre Gomes had a like one at Anfield, didn't he? Which was
yeah. So maybe you also need a Wataru Endo just for that. Of if we do sacrifice and put another player up the pitch, and then we get countered, he'll take a tactical foul every single day of the week.
I think he fits into our best midfield as well when it comes to balance wise. And listen, that's not to say he's playing particularly brilliantly right now, because I'm not sure he is. I think he got better as the game wore on yesterday. I think he struggled first half. I felt like all of a sudden recently, having come to terms with the pace of the Premier League and got used to that, it feels like that couple of weeks he's gone the other way again, and sort of retracted from that. He's getting caught and stuff like that, whether that's a bit of fatigue, a bit of tiredness, whatever. But I think if you were naming Liverpool's best 11 on balance and the way that best suits where we want to go about our business, getting McAllister further forward, for example, Wataru Endo is still in that for me.
My thought to this, if you're going to have all the ball, you might as well have your best footballers on the pitch, which is my argument against Endo, and it's for keeping McAllister in the six. But I think the argument for Endo is actually having someone who'll battle is no bad thing, because I think he can go and win some 50-50s and actually help, you know, dampen their crowd down, help us get our the away end up a little bit. But actually what Endo does best, Chris, and we saw it a little bit more in the back end of the game against Fulham, was he wins the ball on the halfway line and stops counter-attacks or anticipates movements. And the best version of Endo is not this idea that he's going to stop counter-attacks by running back and slide tackling and whatever. Exactly.
Yeah.
And what he does is he allows you, and Fabinho did this at his best, he makes the pitch about 40 yards big.
Penn's team in.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I think you might need for this game, is just to, if you want to really ramp the pressure up on Everton, keep them in their final third.
Yeah. I think Endo's probably in my starting 11 for this one. I think where I go from there is difficult, because I think we have not mentioned it, but it's going to be the last derby at Goodison Park. No, it has the potential to be the last derby at Goodison Park, doesn't it, as well? It is going to be the worst atmosphere in terms for Liverpool players going. And so I want experienced players who are going to be able to handle that pressure as well. Probably if you're not experienced in the Merseyside derby, I want calm, footballers who were just experienced all over to be able to handle those pressures and stuff and have played in big games and stuff like that, because it's going to be nasty.
Yeah. Okay. So, if it's Endo then in the six?
Yeah.
A World Cup winner.
Yeah,
that's McAllister's a shoe.
I think McAllister picks himself as the, and I think, but I, he's the only one who, if Endo starts in six, I think McAllister's playing regardless. I think he's absolutely nailed on to start this game. But in doing that, you're then having it's a big conversation between Szoboszlai, Elliott, and Curtis Jones.
I would play Jones, and I can hear people now screaming at the keyboards. But I do think, you know, he's got that level of experience that you need. He's not going to give the ball away. He's going to recycle it on the edge of the penalty area and stuff like that. So for me, that would probably be my midfield three. I think he's got a little bit of absolutely everything.
My thoughts on, as an aside to this, and what your midfield three is, in fact, give me your midfield three after this point, Clem, is if you're playing McAllister in the six, I would be picking Elliott over Szoboszlai because I think he's earned it. I don't think we will.
Agreed.
I think Szoboszlai will come straight back in if that's the case. I think Klopp will go McAllister, Szoboszlai, Jones, because I think he thinks that's his best midfield. Okay. But I would, if we're to pull the thread on the Endo thing, I agree with Chris's Jones point. I think he'll go Jones. I think if it'll be McAllister in the eighth and Endo. What do you think he'll do, and what would you like to do?
It's tough because what I think he'd do is instantly bring Szobo back into the team. I think he just trusts him. He loves him for the amount of pressing and running he does. And if you need someone to just make like press down in Everton and try and keep the crowd quiet, it is most defo Szobo. He can give you 90 minutes in that kind of atmosphere. He's hungry, he's captain, so he's done it in some atmospheres as well. What I'd do, I mean, I think McAllister has to start, and I want McAllister to be more advanced personally because he's more influential in the number eight, which means I've got to bring Endo back in. And if I'm picking on form, it would have to be Harvey Elliott. However, saying that out loud seems extremely attacking in my head. Like, I'm not worried in terms of the players.
I have visions
of
that.
I'm worried in terms of the balance.
Carvalho, Elliott,
Goodison Park.
That was a thing.
But yeah, on form, I'd probably go with that.
Okay. Moving it to the attacking line then, Dan.
No, I want to know what Dan's doing midfield first. Go on, quickly, just give us your three.
So, Endo, Alexis McAllister, Dom Szoboszlai.
Yeah, that's okay. What I said.
Physicality.
Yeah.
Okay. Engine physicality. Done.
Okay. I'll stick with you then for the attack.
Yeah.
I do... would you...
Go on.
...bring back both Nunes and Salah for this one?
Mm,
and will Klopp?
No and no.
Oh,
I'm going to say, I think he brings back Salah though.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I honestly, more than anyone else, I think the dropping of Salah was that kick up the arse that we mentioned, potentially more than anybody else. So I think he started this one, and mainly because as good as we were yesterday, and I really like the fluidity of the front three and that interchange, and I appreciated that. But no matter how the interchange, no matter how many times they do that, whoever ends up on the right hand side still doesn't feel like the perfect fit. Salah comes back in for me, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Alongside him,
but is that a bit like you see with Salah? He's like, okay, fluidity, but ultimately I could move over there, but I'm going to be best on the right hand side. It's a bit like when you get an Easter egg for someone and they get you the same Easter egg and you go, do we swap these?
Or do we just keep the one that I have?
You have to swap them.
Okay, cool. But that's the Salah thing. Salah's like, should we bother our asses or should I just stay here? Because I'm only going to end up out here anyway. So you do lose. Salah's not going to crop up on the left wing.
No, I think the fluidity stops actually a little bit when Salah comes into the team for that exact reason, to be fair. And alongside, as much as I'd love to start Cody Gakpo again because I think he's earned it, I'm struggling to do that because I have to have Diogo Jota in this starting lineup. I think it's going to be such a Diogo Jota type game. We mentioned it earlier on. I mean, yesterday wasn't really that scruffy a game, but yet still he thrived in it. I think Wednesday night it'll be even scruffier. Yeah. And he's the perfect man for that job. And he thrives in these games. He scored in the past at Goodison Park. So I'd be Jota. And I think I'd be Diaz.
Yeah.
On the other side, to be honest.
My only thing on this is Diaz hasn't had the rest. Everyone else has been rotated.
I keep expecting him to get that rest and he doesn't get it. So I give up saying it now.
And maybe that's the only caveat to this is keep Gakpo left, keep Jota through the middle and bring Salah back into the conversation, because Salah comes back in. I mean, I know people were like, Diaz was brilliant on the right, and first half he definitely was, but he's tired, and that adds, I think, a little bit to this conversation. I agree with the fluidity, but Salah is our world-class attacking player. I just don't think there's a world where he doesn't come back into the team.
He's a big game player as well. Yeah, he really is.
He probably knows he needs to step up as well, if I'm being brutally honest with you. Nobody is more critical of Mohamed Salah than Mohamed Salah. Yeah. Like, we can say what we want about him. He's not at it. It's as simple as that.
Sadio Mane fans from 2017 to 2020.
My preference would actually be Gakpo, Jota, alongside Salah. That'd be my preference personally, but I think Klopp will go Diaz.
Interesting. Yeah. What do people think at home? Let us know. We had a ton of stuff happening in the comments, stuff which I want to get through before we wrap up. Hawks not only gifted 20 Redmen TV memberships, which is stellar. They also posted saying, the only way I'll be okay with Mo going in the summer alongside Fee is if his salary going off the books means we get Trent the contract he wants. Hopefully not necessary. Yeah, that's an interesting point, isn't it? That someone's going to have that conversation at some point, probably Trent's agents, to be fair, of like, my lad's in his prime here, and what does that contract look like?
Vice captain, so you know.
Yeah, definitely. Ryan Kawaja, it was
Ryan.
Yeah,
how's that spelled?
RAIYAAN.
Nice.
That we commented loads yesterday, if you remember.
Didn't look at it.
Okay. This week decides.
I thought you'd just gone with a funny way of pronouncing Ryan, to be honest.
No. Ryan!
Same spelling.
Cool. Well done, guys. Brilliant. Good talk. Good process.
I'm just trying to get you out of this.
We can just let me read the comments. This week decides who wins it, in my opinion. I think City and Arsenal drop points, so we have to capitalise. A derby win would be huge. Big up this great panel. Thank you. Well, yeah.
Thank you, Ryan.
David says it. Pajak and Dan better be in short pants for Wolves when I'm over.
Okay. Guarantee you. If it's a day, then guarantee I will be. Yeah.
Guarantee Steve will be, and guarantee Dan will be. Chris?
Yeah, I will be. I'll hit you up right then.
Okay, cool. And Ryan is back again. Winning the derby on Wednesday will be massive. Will be the last ever derby at Goodison, and I think if we win, we'll end up winning all our games. Honesty Hortensia says, breaking news, Ornstein. West Ham is now looking at Almerim. And then the Invader 96 says, no Ruben Amorim. Who is next on the list? Do we think this means... No, I mean,
We're panicking about West Ham pipping us to, you're mad.
Yeah.
To be honest, unless he just really wants to live in London.
I mean, that is because there were rumours.
Also, they've got a manager. Is Moyes going?
He's going. The writing's on the wall there. He's done.
Yeah. There's been rumours, isn't there, of like Amorim and Chelsea and all this kind of stuff, and the speculation is he's just desperate to live in London. It's just been his dream. His dream's not to manage in the Premier League. His dream is just to be able to live in London for a bit, it's a bit like how so many footballers from the Northwest end up playing for all the Northwest teams when they drop down the divisions.
Get closer to home.
Yeah, just stay like an hour 20 tops away from bed, whatever job you take. So maybe that's him. But I'm with you on that point. Is if he'd rather manage West Ham than Liverpool, then all the best, because what are you doing? Like, okay, there's another comment. Breaking, Liverpool looks unlikely for Ruben Amorim. West Ham in talks over ambitious move for Ruben Amorim. If David Moyes goes, it's honesty or tense. What, have you got anything else?
Talks on standby at this stage between Liverpool and Amorim.
Well, shit.
This could be him, because Liverpool, it's very well documented, I think, that Liverpool are doing their due diligence on a lot of people. And this could be Ruben Amorim and his agents fueling or trying to get everything going a little bit quicker. Yeah, and be like, no, our boy's wanted by other teams here. If you want to get him sorted, you've got to box it off quickly. Yeah. Stop doing due diligence on everyone else. And I don't think Liverpool will be rushed into this decision either.
That is.
So we might miss out on him. you know, it's obviously breaking right now through wanting to get the right man. That's an admirable reason to miss out on somebody, not being rushed into stuff. But if you think he's the right man, go and get a box, because he's clearly available. Well, that's for talks.
Yeah, it's admirable. It's only admirable if you end up getting, if you're not left with like what's left on the table, which we've had with transfers too many times, you know, and certain clubs. And the thing is, you can be resistant to that. We just won't buy a centre half, and we'll wait till we get the right one, and we'll find a way to move through. You can't do that without a manager. I keep coming back to this. We haven't really got time to go into this too much. So I apologise for opening this sort of kind of worms here, but I still keep coming back to it. You just give it to Pep Lijnders. If we're not convinced, you know what I mean? If we're going down this mad route and the guys, the one we want, are not here and they're not on the table, again, it's like the centre-back thing. It's like, what have you got there? You've got a guy who could conceivably just keep it going for a bit, and he might be brilliant or he might be rubbish, but it's not going to cost you anywhere near as much if he's not
the guy. Listen, whatever, with Pep and stuff, like, he won't, it will still be change, and I think Liverpool do need change a little bit, and I think with Pep he would still change it enough that it feels like you've got a new team and they've got new ideas and stuff like that, because there'll be elements, of course, of what he's used and learned from Jürgen and stuff, but he will want to put a stamp on a team himself, and he knows all of the players inside out, and some of the biggest decisions Liverpool have got are around your Virgil van Dijk's and your Mo Salah's and your contract talks and stuff like that, and having an intimate knowledge of them, not just some lad coming in going, oh, I really fancy a year of having Mo Salah, because that would be a really tough thing to try. Will you guarantee me 30 goals, we're going to keep you? Well, might not actually be the best thing for the football.
You're dead right, that is the biggest challenge facing it, is you're getting a manager who can actually come in and weigh up the merits of keeping Salah on a new contract, and Virgil van Dijk on another contract, and Alisson on another contract, and is able to convince Trent that he should be signing another long term contract at the football club, not someone who's just so blinded by the starry lights of like, wow, look how good, he's well better than anything I've managed before, which is the problem with almost every manager we're linked with right now. But also the benefits of having Michael Edwards back at the helm, because he doesn't have that, but also he is a bit more brutal, so maybe he will be the guy who's actually telling Salah that his time's up, as an example, maybe, or not, you know. Honestly, back again says, if not Aminem, I want Hansi Flick or Xavi. Yeah, we'll have to see. I said this when we were doing the watch along, I'm uncomfortable talking about it too much, because my general overriding thing of this is there's not a manager out there who's good enough to replace Jürgen. So I can't get super excited about anyone, because there's no one out there who actually genuinely gets me excited. We were in such a mad situation when Rodgers left that it was between Carlo Ancelotti and Jürgen Klopp, and I would have been absolutely made up with either of those. Everyone else is like, it feels like we're back to buying our starter home, where you've got to give up. You can't get the best of the best of the best. And the thing is, we can actually afford to get whatever we want, but the managers aren't out. They don't exist. They're not out there at the, seemingly to me. So everyone's like, what are you losing? What are you giving up compared to Jürgen Klopp? Something, personality or tactical nous or gift of the gab or man management, motivation, all those kind of stuff, experience, you know, knowledge of European football, etc. So I'm remaining managerial agnostic for the moment. If he wants to go manage West Ham, then he can roundly, soundly fuck off.
You can definitely get behind Pep. You can definitely get behind Amorim. I'm not sure how many other managers out there I can get behind.
That's the thing, isn't it? Immediately, if you're not in that world, you're in a bit of a strange world.
You've got to come in and win football games, you know, to win you over, and that's a dangerous situation, because sometimes you can just misstep, and that's the maddest situation that we're in. I've never experienced this, where even if we lose every game between now and the season, we're still leaving. Klopp's going to leave on a high still, in his own way. You know, you need your head to be done in with the manager, so that the next manager has got a bit of room to manoeuvre. We were all in on Rodgers when he came, because
you know, the Roy Hodgson thing was an absolute unmitigated disaster.
It didn't matter who came in after Hodgson.
It just wasn't Hodgson.
And Kenny, and obviously Kenny did an admirable job sort of stepping up, but Rodgers was coming and he was like, I've got this thing and I've called passing football, you know, and all that. I thought, okay, cool. So if it doesn't work, we can, you can see something new. Yeah, wild. Good luck to Michael Edwards and Hughes, because that's a big old job and remains even bigger. But yeah, let's not stress about it too much. We've got a fucking league title to win.
Have we covered five managers while we've been doing Redmen in the 14 years?
Rafford had just been sacked.
So four.
Hodge, Kenny, Rodge, Klopp. Wild. Anyway, thank you so much. We have got a league title to win, so let's focus on that instead of fucking managerial talk. We can all stress about that in our own time. More chat from us about the Premier League. We're going to be having a good old laugh at Manchester United's expense, of course, because it's the Bias Football Podcast on a Monday. We're going to be talking about Everton and, of course, the crazy Nottingham Forest fight with PGMOL. Is it crazy because they're right? Is it crazy because they're wrong? Is it a bit of both? Join us on the Bias Football Podcast to find out, and we're going to be looking ahead to the midweek fixtures in a bit more detail as well. So anyway, yes, do use the code RACE for half price of a yearly subscription on redmenplus.com, and I'll see you there.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.